All right, thank you. Recording has started. You may continue.
Thank you. The recording started. So, first, we've got an agenda for the privacy sub-team. We've got our first.
David, we're not hearing you now if you're continuing to speak. Did we lose connection?
This is Marie. It looks like there was a disconnect in the audio bridge for the AC rooms. I suspect that those that are on AC audio only may have been disconnected and they need to reconnect their microphones.
Yes, please stand by. Thank you. Please continue to stand by.
Who is from the privacy team is on the call? I know we have Stephanie. I know we have a number of others. We have Kathy.
David, this is Chuck. I don't think you were on when Michaela did it, but it worked pretty well. Would everybody in the on the privacy team raise your hands in the Adobe so that we can see a quick look at which members of the team are there? Thanks. And then it's back to you.
Yes, I saw Steve, Aiden, Sana. Yep. Yeah, Phil, Stephanie. Right, thank you. Those on the team. Greg, yep. Right, so yes, we have a fair representation from the team here. So our first question is, did the input produce any insights to inform the working group's work plan? This was discussed a little bit just on the data call I know about the audit we're just finishing up. Does anyone, is that Kathy, you were still doing to speak to this point? No? Steve, no? So we've got no one who wants to discuss that issue at this point. So we'll move on to the main question of which inputs are likely to be the most relevant during working group deliberations and why. Does anyone want to discuss, want to nominate a particular input to start with? Or should we go through the inputs that we have already mentioned and we can each discuss it in order? Steve.
Yeah, thanks. This is Steve. I'll just start this off. I mean, there are a lot of important documents here. The real question is which ones are likely to be the most relevant to what we're supposed to be doing. And I had raised the question about the SREMS and Privacy Shield documents. I guess this is the sixth bullet down. And I think in what Chuck circulated, it was put in brackets. I expect that's because I had raised this question. I think that's obviously a very important, decision by the European Court. and very important how the U.S. and the EU have reacted to it, creating this new privacy shield and so forth, and there have been opinions issued about that. But I don't think it has a lot of relevance to what we're doing here, or perhaps as much, because as far as I know, the Schrems decision struck down the safe harbor that had been established, the safe harbor regime that had been established by the U.S. and the European Union in, I believe, 1999 or 2000. But to my knowledge, no one that was collecting or making available who is data really relied on that safe harbor in order to do so. So I don't think it really, striking it down, obviously it's a very important development for a lot of businesses and for a lot of data collection and dissemination, but I think who is it's probably not as important for. So again, I'm not saying it's not relevant, but if we were ranking the top ones in terms of relevance, I'm not sure I would put that one on there. I mean, this whole list is kind of European heavy, which reflects what's in the overall compilation, our 56 or ever many page summary that we have. But I do think this one is a bit peripheral, or more peripheral than the others. Thanks.
Yep, thanks, Steve. And that's a good point, the relevance of the Schrems and the Privacy Shield. Dave, we've also noted that this is likely to be a very quickly changing area. So exactly which documents are most relevant possibly going to be changing over the, we need to track this issue over the course of, it will change during our year of deliberation, is all I'm saying. So the specific documents may change in their relevance. Kathy.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me, David?
Yes.
Great. Hello, everybody. I think Schrems is critical, and particularly where it is in the order. And I'll explain. It's not just Schrems. There's Schrems and the U.S. Privacy Shield and the Article 29 Working Party opinion on the Privacy Shield, which is less than a month old. So if you go through looking at bullet point number 3, we're looking at the EU Data Protection Directive from 1995. And that, you know, creates a baseline for data protection laws throughout the EU. Then, actually, a prior document is the Council of Europe's 1981 Treaty 108 on Data Protection Principles. But it's been signed by 47 or 48 countries, I forget. So going beyond the EU to Eastern European countries as well as others. And then Professor Greenleaf's articles and books, he's been tracking this for years. And what he tells us is that in 2015, last year, the scale tipped. And there are more countries in the world with comprehensive data protection laws than without, based on the principles largely in the EU Data Protection Directive and the Council of Europe's Treaty 108. So these two are the foundational documents. And what Schrems tells us is that, and frankly, this is my own personal commentary, but after hearing in the United States the law of the EU, the safe harbor, which had to do with data flows from the EU to the U.S., was mocked for 2 decades. I heard it laughed at. What Schrems is telling us is they're not laughing at it anymore. Enforcement is now the bottom line. The top court in the EU, kind of like the Supreme Court in the United States, has now ruled that, has now ruled on the issue, had invalidated something that had stood for almost 2 decades, and said, you know, basically kind of reading between the lines, because I'm not going to quote the opinion, we're serious about this. We're serious about the principles we've established in the Data Protection Directive, and we're watching now. And so I think that what comes next, then, the U.S. Privacy Shield, I can't imagine anything, the EU-U.S. Privacy Shield. We're now talking about data flows, data coming in and out, personal data, sensitive data coming in and out of the EU and other countries with data protection laws. And as we look to our work, we're thinking about thick who-is-is. We're thinking about a possible, EWG has hypothesized a possible centralized database of all GTLD who-is. Nothing's more important than data flows. That's the underlying basis, this data will no longer stay with the registrar. It will be transferred outside of national borders. So nothing's more important than the decisions and the opinions that govern that. And so I think we'll see that with both SHRMS and with the Article 29 Working Party opinions. And there are people here on this group who certainly know more about those than I do. Thanks very much.
I think I was next in the queue, and I spoke. Just very quickly, is the data flows safe harbor, any replacement of it is important from both registrars and registry perspective, because it essentially allows or forbids us to transfer the data legally. One of the issues that a lot of the registrars faced, and what we still do face, I suppose, is that Iron Mountain, as the only escrow provider at the moment that I can pays for, what we pay for, but that I can then covers the cost of, doesn't provide servers within the EU. So all our registration data has to be transferred outside the EU, which is problematic. And as an Irish company, we have to be we are registered with the Irish Data Protection authorities, and we have to make a declaration as part of that registration as to our transfers abroad. And while our data protection people are quite nice in that they don't go hunting us down due to other third-party obligations, it is kind of important. Now, whether it should be the most important or something else, I'm not going to get into that, but I think it's something that is definitely worth keeping an eye on. But I'd also add it's also something that is currently in flux. Thanks.
Thank you, Michele. Steve, are you still in back in the queue? I assume you want to respond?
I'm back in the queue, but since I've spoken before, I'll be glad to defer to Susan and then speak after that.
Okay, then. Susan.
Well, thanks, Steve, and thanks, David. And actually, I am not a member of this group, but I just wanted to make a comment and sort of a question. So thank you for deferring. But so, Kathy, in all of the documents that you've quoted, you keep saying personal data. And I think we have two different segments, which is sort of an old discussion point. But I'm wondering how we're going to look at the privacy concerns for a commercial entity. So there's, in my opinion, there's personal contact data and there's commercial contact data. And I don't think that we should be treating all data in the WHOIS record for all domain registrants as personal data, because Facebook doesn't have any right, any personal rights, as far as I understand privacy law, to protect their data. In fact, we have, in a lot of countries, almost extraordinary duties to provide contact data to our users, anybody viewing the site. So I'm wondering how we sort of thread the needle between dealing with personal contact data, which I absolutely agree with, and dealing with commercial contact data.
David, can I give this a shot? This is Kathy.
I prefer to
I'd like to answer
these
questions.
Please.
These are good questions.
Yeah.
If you can answer Susan's questions.
Great. Kathy Kleiman for the record, and Susan, great questions. Just a note, actually I use two terms together, which is personal data and sensitive data, because, of course, personal data and individual's home address is personal. But sensitive data would be a mosque, the address of a mosque located in an area that doesn't like mosques, and the mosque may be concealed in certain areas of the South. It's hard to see. In fact, even in Fairfax, Virginia, there's a number of trees around a very large mosque that's nearby my house. sensitive data would be the location of a battered women's shelter. Sensitive data would be the location of a minority political group. And so, actually, the treaties address this as well. Treaty 108 in particular, the Council of Europe Treaty, addresses sensitive data, and there are a number of documents that I can go through the list afterwards if you would like, that address the question of sensitive data that might involve political organizations. So what we found actually in the Proxy Privacy Accreditation Working Group was that the line between commercial and non-commercial, line between personal and commercial is not so clear, and that the privacy interests, including those very much protected under data protection laws and even under the United States First Amendment, and I'm sure if we dug deeper, many other countries, that ability of minority political speech, ethnic speech, sexual speech, religious speech, often which is done under corporations, because in the United States you can't have a 501c3 charitable educational research status unless you're a corporation, that the line was not so clear, and that the WHO's review team found, as you know, because you were on it, that all forms of all entities, organizations, individuals, and corporations have some level of established legal need for privacy. And what we're finding out is that the data protection laws and other laws protect that as well. Thanks so much.
David, are you managing the queue?
Yes. So that was Kathy's response to Susan's question. Now return to Steve in the queue, I think.
Thank you. Steve Metalis, just very briefly, I didn't hear anything what Kathy said that really responded to my concern, which is that, yes, this is a very important development, but unless an entity was relying on the safe harbor to justify data flows to the United States, then the striking down of the safe harbor doesn't directly impact it. So, I think she's saying that this is indicative of a higher level of enforcement. I don't know whether that's true or not, but to the extent that is true, it remains the case that there has not been any enforcement action taken by any European data protection authority with respect to who is data, to my knowledge. Again, I would not consider this of the highest relevance. I guess I'd just like to ask one other question, which is, I heard at the very end of the discussion of the last subgroup, there was some discussion about whether the order in which these points are listed, in order in which these documents are listed, whether that was or was not relevant. I'm assuming we're not trying to rank these in order of importance. We're just trying to rank, trying to identify what we think are the most, at this point, seem to be the most relevant documents. So I'd be happy to be corrected if I'm wrong. I just think ranking them in order of importance is going to be a lot more difficult even than saying these are among the most important. Thank you.
That's a good question. Other than some are more important than others, I don't think we're aiming for any ranking stricter than that. But Susan, I think next in the queue, I think Shimi wanted to respond to the same question. So, carry on, Susan.
Sorry, I just forgot to take my hand down. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. No. no worries. Stephanie.
Thanks very much. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I'll try to be brief. I wanted to just add a couple of things to what Kathy had said. Number one, one of the interesting things to note in the Schrems decision is a new phenomenon, that is people complaining and demanding enforcement. And number two, with response, and to me that's almost as important because I know he's champing to go with a whole lot of other complaints. So take note, as Steve says, there have been no high-profile enforcement actions against ICANN. That is because in all of the documentation that ICANN has received from the Article 29 group, it has basically been negotiation documents organization, it has not been enforcement against ICANN as a data controller. If a data commissioner were to take an enforcement action against ICANN as a data controller, then, of course, the issue of the escrow and the failure to provide and the issue of safe harbor would become relevant from the perspective of a European data commissioner wondering whether transport to the United States to Iron Mountain was considered adequate. So, I mean, I think these are important, almost markers as much as the substance. And I'm not saying there is no substance in it. I'm just saying there's a turning point coming here in terms of enforcement action. The third thing I wanted to add in terms of what Kathy had said, it's important to note that the European Economic Area states also pretty well copy the directive and are now busy copying the regulation, so that the impact, as Greenleaf says in his papers, of the directive is extremely broad. Everybody is drafting, even though their legal tradition is probably different, common law, civil law, you name it. They will draft in such a way as to be deemed adequate. So that's one of the reasons that the directive has had such a profound impact on other data protection law. And I think that's all I need to say at the moment, except to say that it's really difficult figuring out a short list of important documents, because the documents are important for different reasons, and it depends on what we're working on, which document we're going to refer to. So I think I said in the email earlier, from my perspective, with the discussion of the order and the discussion of the overall purpose of what we're doing in the collection, use, and disclosure of registrant data under ICANN's authority as a data controller, there's nothing more important than that purpose document, because it helps you decide what the purpose of your collection of data is. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. Michele.
Well, thanks. Just very, very briefly, Michele, for records and all that. I think this has come up in a few places from a few different people, and I think it seems to be something that for some people is more of an issue than it is for others. You know, the idea that what we're trying to do here is to highlight, you know, some documents and some studies and things like that doesn't mean that any of the other documents or studies are not important. And it's just more a case of, you know, if you're given like a floor to ceiling stack of books to read as a college assignment, and somebody said you have to read all these books, your head will probably explode. Well, actually, okay, some people's heads will probably go, oh, yay, this is fantastic. But I think most of us, our heads will probably explode. Where somebody was to say to you, look, please start with these three or four texts, but, you know, please note this is the rest of the library or something. I don't know. It's just the fact that you know, we're asking you all to choose some documents or to highlight certain documents does not take away anything from any of the other documents. And remember, this is just an exercise to just kind of try to kind of highlight things. It also helps some people who may not be as familiar with the background material as others to try and get up to speed. Thanks.
Kathy, should I go next, David?
Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. I just wanted to support what Michele just said, even though I was already in the queue and he was saying it. And I wanted to ask, there are people on this call who have summarized, there seem to be a lot of other documents in our summary, And I was wondering whether there are others that we should be adding. And so it's a shout-out to whoever did the summaries on the African Union Convention on Cybersecurity and Personal Data Protection, and to Sana, who did the IWG opinions. Are there other opinions we should be adding in here that from, you know, because, again, there seem to be so many in the summary. Is there something, other things that should be going in that really rise to the top as very relevant arguments, discussions, points? Thanks.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
Thanks very much. I actually forgot one of my more important points when I spoke earlier. This is Stephanie Perrin for the record, sorry. And that is this whole debate over personal information versus commercial information. And it then becomes, in my mind, yes, commercial organizations in many jurisdictions are required by government regulation to have a public listing. The question is that within ICANN's remit? An organization that is operating on the Internet may be forced by its government to have its address, phone numbers, directors, business number, and all of that listed on its website. But that's not ICANN's business, looking at what has to be up on a website, any more than ICANN determines what websites have to provide under public services for handicapped access, you know? That's not within ICANN's remit. So I think the discussion is very interesting, and it is certainly one that the data commissioners are aware of, and they are not likely to take an enforcement against a company, but it is important to note that under European data protection law, employees have rights, so that an employee of a German organization, for instance, is not required to put his contact data up on an industry website. So, or release it in the who is, rather. So, either way. So, I think that's an important thing to note, that we need to get into the details, and in some jurisdictions, they cannot even consent to it. It's a proportionality thing. So, let's try and be clear about what is ICANN's job to publish and what is a government job to publish or require the publication of. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. So at this point, we don't have anyone else in the queue. And I'd also like to say, I think we're drifting into discussion of, the actual issues rather than documents. So we're drifting outside of the sub-team remit, and we also only have, we've used about half of our time, and we still have sort of several issues to discuss. So I think, quickly, does anyone, I take it that documents like SAC 54 and EWG recommendations are uncontroversial. Everyone agrees that these are quite important documents regarding privacy. There's a whole group of documents that sort of go together about the EU data protection and so on, but there is some contention that Steve raised about SREMS and Privacy Shield. So perhaps we'll take that back onto the list, but we've got, I take it that we have some idea of which inputs are likely to be most relevant. And we've got some discussion to take back on the list as to exactly which. So let's move on to some of those questions. Which inputs have any generated the most discussion within the small team? which inputs may be obsolete or superseded by previous, by subsequent work? And are there any gaps in the stuff we looked at to be addressed later? So do people have any thoughts on those questions?
Go ahead, Greg.
Thanks. My hand's actually been for a while. It's up on the previous point with regard to which are our top most relevant documents, and I wanted to state that I don't believe that McIntyre versus Ohio Elections Commission should be considered one of our most relevant documents. The holding in that case, you know, related to the requirement that political pamphlets have name and address of the pamphleteer on them. What's stated here is actually dictum, in other words, not the actual holding of the case, and not entirely accurate. So I will submit a redraft of that. Will hopefully take us, you know, for our general list. But I think that the overall applicability in terms of this being in our top five is not even close. And I think that, and if we do look at it, it certainly states that not all anonymous speech or not all, you know, that the anonymity of speech is not always protected, that there are types of speech that are not protected or have any, you know, right to anonymity. And those include many types of speech that do come up on websites, to the extent that we're even looking at what's on websites or not, which gets us into other questions. But generally, I would strike that one off the list. Not to say, again, that it should be irrelevant to all our discussions, but not top five in terms of understanding, you know, U.S. Privacy law. And the like, and happy to discuss that, you know, the particulars of it at another time, but in terms of discussing relevance, whether it's highly relevant or not, my vote is no. Thanks.
Okay, this is Chuck. I'm going to jump in. We're getting down to less than 15 minutes on this team call, and like David suggested, please try to get at least a start on some of the other questions that are on the screens so that it will facilitate the work of the team in the next 7 days. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. I think good point made about that particular document. I have to admit, for various reasons, that document might not be in my top five of relevant either. But as Chuck said, we need to move on. And particularly, he said, interested in this question of which inputs might be obsolete or superseded by subsequent work, and input gaps are both things that we need to get onto in this call. Steve, you're next in the queue.
Yes, thank you. I'll address question four very briefly. I've already raised this on the list. A lot of the documents in our compilation are based on the 1995 Data Protection Framework Directive, including those that are listed under Roman II. That instrument is going to be superseded by 2018 by a general data protection regulation. And I think even optimistically, that will be before anything that comes out of this working group has been implemented. So I just wanted to flag that we ought to look at whether the supplanting of the Data Protection Directive by the Data Protection Regulation impacts any of the opinions issued under the Framework Directive. And we've already discussed on the list, and Stephanie said she was going to check into that with some of the authorities in Europe. So hopefully we will have a little better sense of that as we go along. I'm not suggesting that the everything that came out of the Article 29 Working Party is now obsolete, but I am saying that we need to take into account that it was interpreting or applying a legal instrument that will no longer be in force as of 2018. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. That's an excellent point. And as I said, it has been discussed on the list, but it's worth noting. Kathy.
Kathy Clennon, to several different points. One is, and this is a shout out to Lisa, to please add Peter Kimpian to our subgroup. He keeps trying to join, he says. He is a member of the working group. He comes from the Data Protection Commission of Hungary, and I wrote to him this morning per Steve's question, and he said the principles of the EU data protection laws and the Treaty 108, and here I quote, will not change with the new GDPR, the new law, but will become even more strict. So in our next call, in our next discussion, hopefully we'll have Peter with us because he can comment directly on this. So same principles, even stricter enforcement per Schrems and others. Circling back to what Greg said, McIntyre versus Ohio Elections Commission could not be more on point. You do not have to put your name and address on any kind of speech, cultural, social, political, as a condition of entering the debate. They commenting per dictum on a long history of input of anonymous speech throughout the world. That is dicta, but they went on and on and on. I only gave a few quotes in the summary, but that's the law. They invalidated a requirement to put name and address, which is exactly what we're doing here, or at least that's the most sensitive of the data we're working on, is name and particularly address. I just wanted to say with EWG, and I would prefer to put it in the top set of bullet points, but we can put it in terms of what is superseded or obsolete or needs to be included. And I would certainly say the EWG dissent. It's very unusual not to publish a dissent with the opinion. There have been complaints to ICANN about this all along, but with EWG recommendations should come the EWG dissent so people can read it as a single package. Thanks much.
Thank you, Kathy. And Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I see that Fab has asked in the chat, is this an opinion or fact? I think given that kind of question, that the best recommendation we could make is to write the Article 9 group and ask whether we should continue to consider their opinions relevant. Because I don't think any hearsay that I get or that I got from my discussions today is going to be useful in that regard. So I would suggest that we draft up a little letter and ask them what's going on. Because quite frankly, I think that we will not get much attention from the Article 29 group at the moment. They are very, very busy checking the different language versions of the document. It's 400 pages in the English. Some of them are only halfway through figuring out the implications. The different nation states have to change their national law. There's a lot happening, and quite frankly, ICANN is not top of mind, nor the most important privacy issue in the world. So if we want an answer, if we want to disregard all of them, then we better write them and say, can we disregard all your previous work? I think it's timely to do that. Thanks.
David, are you still there?
Sorry, yes, I had muted myself. Thank you, Stephanie, for that input. I think we'll discuss this issue hopefully on the next sub-team call, where, as Kathy suggests, Peter may be present, may be able to help us deal with issues relevant to the Article 29 working group and the incoming data protection regulations. Do we have, just to bear in mind, we are running short, very short on time, so anyone, feel free to address any of the remaining questions that we have. Thank you. Steve.
Yes, thank you. Just briefly on five, I think this is an input gap, and but it's already been referenced a couple of times in our call, which is that there have not been any enforcement actions by data protection authorities claiming that the current system of WHOIS violates the data protection laws of their country. In terms of the Article 29 group, again, I'm not discounting what the relevance of what they say, but it is important to remember they are an advisory group. They don't enforce any data protection law. So it's the National Data Protection Authorities that do that in Europe. And so I suppose in a sense it's a gap, or maybe we can just simply note as an important factor that there have not been these enforcement actions during the 20 years that the Data Protection Framework Directive has been in effect, and during the 18 years that ICANN has been the steward of the existing registration data system called WHOIS, there have not been any of these enforcement actions. I think that's a highly relevant consideration for us, so I don't know whether it belongs under Romanet 5 or somewhere else, but I just thought I would mention it here. Thank you.
No, that's an interesting point. I'm not sure how we, as a discussion group, deal with the absence, not so much documents that are absent from consideration, but documents that are absent from existence. But it's a good question. Kathy.
And follow up to Steve, but taking a different side, of course, under 5 or 4, where it seems to be being typed in, I think we should include the Article 29 opinions that we've received, because they're actually not all advisory. And I read one of them, which says that it is a unified form of written guidance from each of the 28 national data protection authorities in Europe and the European Data Protection Supervisor. This is writing to John Jeffrey at ICANN. This provides a single statement for all relevant registrars doing whatever it was they were writing on that involved WHOIS and data retention in Europe. So it's much more than advisory. This is legal guidance. So I think we'll hear from Peter and others that the Article 29 opinions, especially all of those written directly to ICANN, which are in our summary, should be included very clearly and at the top of our list for full working group evaluation, because they are speaking very strongly. And I keep questioning number 5, the input about the WHOIS registration ID study. I'm not sure how relevant that is, having been one of the people who designed the terms of the study. I think we may be using it for something it wasn't intended. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Stephanie, next. Just a note, we are running short on time, so everyone please be brief and continue to address the remaining questions. Thank you.
Well, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, obviously I agree with Kathy that, the whole purpose of the Article 29 Working Group was to coordinate, and the fact that ICANN has ignored their attempts to coordinate and provide a unified is mind-boggling. Now, we've had this argument already, those of us who were on the WHOIS Conflicts with Law group. It is mind-boggling that we have disregarded advice from the data commissioners. We are forcing them to take enforcement action, and unfortunately, we've been playing chicken with the registrars. It is the registrars who the enforcement action will be taken against, And the reason why there has not been wholesale enforcement action, in my opinion, has been that there have been accommodations made in the form of privacy proxy services available. And so they have focused mostly on the who is. But we are playing chicken with the registrars. The other two aspects that could be the cause of an enforcement action, of course, is the overcollection and the escrow and data retention requirements. And, you know, quite frankly, the fact that there hasn't been enforcement action, A, you don't necessarily know because privacy complaints are handled in private, and there are a great many companies, countries, rather. I would not know if there has been a complaint in a province in Canada, and I try to keep up on this. So gathering the statistics on this is extremely difficult because of the private nature of the investigation process. Thanks.
Okay, Stephanie, this is Chuck. Let me jump in. We've about run out of time on this team. Now, keep in mind that we want you to continue these discussions all this week on your list and generate some closer to finalized responses to each of the questions. I would like to just give a minute to David for any instructions he has or direction he wants to give the team before we take a few-second break to switch the recording for the next team. David?
Thank you, Chuck. Briefly, I think this has been a very useful discussion. I think it's shown that there is definitely some issues on which the team does not agree. My feeling is we'll handle that in discussion over the next week. But I'm probably inclined towards the where there is dissent, the team should not. Where there is some dissent, there's a chance the team may be trying to look at issues outside the team's remit a little in terms of whether or not deciding what is relevant may depend on questions that should go to the broader working group. But we'll discuss that in the team. We didn't get to key takeaways from the input inventory the team wishes to share with the broader working group, and that is something that I think we really need to work on in this working group, is see if we can come to a couple of paragraphs or something discussing the broader issues that we have come up during this documentation discussion. So we'll have to get that. It'll be an active week on the working group list until the next meeting, and thank you all for a good discussion this evening.
And this is Chuck again. Please try to get your additional input on your list by the end of this week, in other words, by Friday, so that on Monday the team can kind of pull together what they want to share with the full working group in our meeting next Tuesday. Thank you very much, everyone. It's been great discussion and participation. We're going to take just a few-second break to switch recordings for the next team, which is the purpose team. And everyone's welcome to stay on if you like. So let's take a pause, stop this recording, and start a new one.
Great. Thanks.